Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
So a couple of years ago, HBO was filming Hard Knocks, and they were in Cleveland. And one of their standout guys from that year was Carl Nassib. He came across as a great teammate, huge high-energy guy, very funny. He gave a lesson in economics on a whiteboard that I still remember.
Yes,
that was great, talking
hilarious.
About what compound interest really means. And it was great. I instantly liked Carl Nassib. As a player, you got to be impressed with what he's put on the field, too. Well, Carl Nassib just became the very first NFL player to come out as gay. This isn't a guy who wants to be drafted by the St. Louis Rams and maybe, you know, has a cup of preseason coffee. This is an established NFL entity, and he just went on Instagram to say, "What's up, people? I wanted to take a quick moment to let you know I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but finally feel comfortable getting it off of my chest." Adam Schefter just broke this news. And in the big world of manly, mannish football, that's news. No doubt about it.
Very much so. There have been other players who have come out, but both times it was after their retirements. Now, Jerry Smith, the tight end in Washington, and Dave Coppé, the fullback in San Francisco, back in the 60s. But to come out now, I mean, it is the equivalent of what Michael Sam did. And Michael Sam did it in a far more hostile environment than Carl Nassib did. But anytime somebody comes out to make an admission to, not an admission, but an acknowledgement like that, I mean, that's to be applauded because, one, it's brave because of the things that you don't know that are out there. And two, there are kids who are fighting with those very decisions right now, some of whom might be playing sports. So hats off to him because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it's a huge moment. I mean, I don't know if it'll be a little less of a huge moment because, as Ray said, we're a few years down the road from Michael Sam and maybe slightly more open-minded as a culture, but not much, I don't think. And this football's still football. And you know, look, I don't think I need to name any names, but I think anyone can think of a couple of guys just on that Raider locker room who you know, might not take that the best. So it's a brave thing to do in the NFL and
in any locker room.
It's in any professional locker room at this point. Yeah, really, it's just even just by virtue of the rarity, it's a brave thing to do. And so huge credit to him. And hopefully, look, any realistic person realizes that there are gay guys on at least a handful of teams in every major professional sport. It's just the math makes it almost impossible that there aren't. So, you know, hopefully Carl Nassib doing this is a step to other guys feeling comfortable enough to also do it. And, you know, I think I speak for the show when I say we just want people to live their best lives.
That's it. Just be who you are. No one ever told me who I was or wasn't allowed to fall in love with, and how arrogant to think that it would be up to me to tell someone who you could or couldn't love. And there are people who still obviously do that, and they have agendas, and they're wrapped up in things that really aren't even that anymore, and they've sort of co-opted a cause to represent something else. This is good. This is, you know, here's the thing. What have we talked about? And over the last couple of years, one of the biggest themes in the world in the workplace, in entertainment, in all media. Everywhere you look, we have learned and established that representation matters. Gay, theoretically in sports, was something to talk about and then move on to the next topic. Now it's there you go, NFL. It's officially there. I would imagine that we will begin this season with another player coming out now that Carl Nassib has sort of, you know, first through the wall, if you will.
There was a story over the weekend on ESPN about the former San Francisco supervisor, Tom Ammiano, who got his Letterman sweater in track from high school 63 years later, because when he actually did the thing to earn that sweater, some students and teachers kept him from getting it because he was openly gay. So, you know, there's two big stories that, frankly, ought to at least defrost your heart a bit.
There you go. Well, Tom Ammiano is like rock star gay. Like, he's like, you want to talk about the you know, being among the first class of out government employees and public servants ever. I mean, he's, you know, he's in the Harvey Milk class, if you will.
Yeah, and it took somebody he'd never met to sort of fight that fight for him with the administration of the high school that has probably changed hands at least four times. But he finally got what he had earned. So, you know, Carl Nassib, absolutely heroic, but there's still a lot of dirt to shovel.
Indeed. Indeed, there is.
There you go. It's a story, and it's got to be a story in a station based in San Francisco as much as anywhere. So what can we do, do you congratulate Carl Nassib in that moment? Congratulations, you are who you are.
Yeah.
Or at least you're now publicly comfortable with revealing who you are, who, you know. Look at it this way. There has not been a singular public getting to know Carl Nassib moment I haven't enjoyed, and we haven't found it yet. You know what I mean? Good for him.
Indeed.
I don't think you congratulate him. I think you thank him.
Fair.
For all the other
too.
People that get to be, you know, that get to feel comfortable about coming out, that's a debt they owe him, because he stood on the shoulders of other people who had done the same thing. And I think that's what you do. You just say thanks.
Yeah. Thanks and congratulations. Why not? It's a good day for him, and hopefully it's a good day for all of us as you know, we kick these doors through a little bit more open.
You know who it's going to be a bad day for? Howard Beck, because he's going to join us coming up next. So that's a short straw,
yeah.
Howard
well, there's
Beck.
There's nothing we can do for him.
I'm sorry. He knew the job was dangerous when he took it. The hell with him.
Well, yep. That's a good way to approach it as well. He knew what he was getting into. What we are going to get into is everything that happened in the NBA playoffs. Obviously, yesterday was a day that, you know, Ben Simmons is a real, real easy target. And he made himself an easy target. A fourth quarter performance over a seven-game series that leaves you with so many questions. Ironically, here's what's crazy, is that in the fourth quarter in this series, Ben Simmons shot 100%. He never missed a shot. In game one, he was 2 for 2 from the field in the fourth quarter. In game two, he did not shoot in the fourth quarter. And in game one, he was 1 for 1. In games 4, 5, 6, and game 7, 4 games in a row, the man did not attempt a fourth quarter field goal. He showed fear. You can have a bad night. You can have a bad season. You can blow it at home in a game 7. But what you can't do in the NBA is show a level of fear or unconfidence in your own game. And that's what Ben Simmons showed. And his own teammates couldn't help but criticize him for it. Let's start with his coach. Here's what Doc Rivers said when he was asked about Simmons's future leading the Sixers to a title. Here's Doc Rivers.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. You know, so I don't know the answer to that.
What do you, when you say get in the gym with him, what needs to be done? I mean, obviously, this is coaching.
Yeah, I mean, that's between Ben and I.
Wow. Okay, so in the history of trying to put out a post-game fire for a guy or letting the whole village burn, Doc Rivers just threw gasoline on Simmonsville. Like Ben, like Doc just went in there to make sure that the whole village burnt down. He could have offered a safety net. He didn't.
I think he feels like he's offered enough safety nets.
Well, he came out today and said they have a plan to help him. Also didn't say what it was.
Yeah, it might be driving him to the airport.
I think basically what he said was, we're here to help if you want it. Because I think part of the problem here is that, you know, as well as being, you know, basically skittish about shooting the ball at all, I think there's a little bit of him that says, I feel like if I give in to this, I've somehow failed. That his pride is getting in the way of fixing the problem that everybody is shrieking about. And so I think this is a more extensive matter than bringing him in over the summer and just working on his shooting stroke. I think it's talking to him about, here's how you can be the player who can help us get there, because this isn't working. And if he's going to be stubborn about it, then whether they trade him or not, they have to be done with that. You know, they have to accept the fact that Simmons is not going to be part of the solution unless he wants to be willing to solve the problem that he's bringing to the floor. I mean, if he thinks it's because other people aren't supporting him, you know, whether or not they have or not, that's the first thing that Doc Rivers has to do, is say, we're not trying to embarrass you. We're trying to, you know, make you the player you can be and the player we want you to be. So I think this is more than just a, yeah, we have a secret plan. No, you got it. The plan isn't that secret. You've got to rebuild his head, and then you got to rebuild his shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what he's saying.
I think that's what he's saying too, which is why, you know, the point needs to be made that, hey, you're missing it.
Look at it this way. If he is saying that, while he was saying that, he also handed Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio all the hammers and nails they need to finish the crucifixion of Ben Simmons.
No, but
afternoon.
Ray was talking about what he said today about having a plan, you know. Like, he was specifically saying they have – I mean, I don't think he needs to tell you exactly what drills they're going to do to convince you that the plan involves fixing his brain and fixing his shot. Everyone in the world who watched that thing knows those are the two problems.
So I do know this. What else is he going to say? Because that was the first year of a full max. I mean, there's a lot of money left on this guy's contract. And, oh, by the way – and by no means is Ben Simmons like a scrub that you got to get rid of. He is a curious case, though, and we will get into a man who explores curious NBA cases for a living. Howard Beck is going to join us, and he lives in Brooklyn, so we will start with a tour de force performance in defeat that Kevin Durant showed us over the weekend. So stay tuned. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we are brought to you by your Northern California Toyota dealers. Easy for me to say, and it's easy for you for a chance to win $1,000 coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Chance to win $1,000 here and now. Text the code word MUTE to 72881. MUTE to 72881. This is brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Toyota, let's go places. A multi-state contest with message and data rates applying. We always love the message and the way he breaks down the data he gets from NBA games. Howard Beck, senior writer, Sports Illustrated, nice enough to join us here again on Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky. Howard, as always, thanks for your time. How you doing?
Doing all right, fellas. How are you?
Man, we're doing really well. We can't help but think what the world might be looking like for the Golden State Warriors had Kevin Durant stuck around town. He did not, obviously. He goes.
You're still thinking that now? It's been like 2 years.
I know, but it's hard to get over someone who is that special. It really, really is. And I'll say this, though. I felt like Kevin Durant probably did earn more credit with a very harsh critic of the country in defeat than he did in wins with the Warriors, which is kind of why I think he left. And God, he was spectacular in defeat in this series. He was otherworldly at times, and but for a shoe size, he might be in the Eastern Conference Finals.
See, this is why he never admits to being 7 feet tall, because then he'd have to admit to his shoe size also, and he's really trying to do is shorten the shoe size so that it won't encroach on the three-point line. I have no idea what I'm saying. No, I mean, he was incredible, but, I mean, lest we forget, he did go to Brooklyn with Kyrie as a package deal and certainly was influential, I would imagine, behind the scenes, and Harden arriving there by trade. So if they were whole, and then they likely win the conference finals and or win their series, go to the conference finals, maybe go to the finals and win a championship, and he's getting all the same criticism that he got in Golden State.
Is there, now that we've gotten to the conference final stage with so many guys banged up or hurt, that it's going to be hard to be fully satisfied with whoever comes out of this as a champion because there are so many things that have been weird about this play, weirder than most playoffs, that whoever survives won't get sort of the credit that a champion normally gets because of all the madness around them?
I'll apply the same principle I applied last year during the bubble season, which was if the champion looks like a legit champion in terms of their construction, their star power, the talent is evident, then everybody's fine with it. So LeBron and Anthony Davis win a championship, and yeah, there's always going to be people who, because they're always looking for ways to denigrate LeBron James or don't like the Lakers or whatever, they're going to say, bubble season. Or if you didn't think that the Miami Heat was legitimate, you're going to find ways to try to put down what they accomplished. But my feeling at the time was, before that playoffs in the bubble, was as long as it's not some it couldn't be the Indiana Pacers. Sorry, Indiana. If the Pacers won it all, we'd go like, massive asterisk. Something went horribly wrong. But it was LeBron James, who's been to nearly every finals for the last decade plus, and they won a championship. So it didn't feel anomalous. And this one, similarly, if, let's say, Kawhi Leonard comes back healthy and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George win it all, that looks like a championship team. They've got two top 15 or wherever you want to rank them guys. If the Suns win it, with Chris Paul, a future Hall of Famer, assuming he comes back from COVID protocols soon, and Devin Booker, who's an incredible young star and great balance and a nice team, like, that's not going to look anomalous. The Bucks have a two-time MVP in Giannis. The only anomaly will feel would be like if Atlanta won it all, right? And they're really super talented, and they've done a really nice job of drafting and putting together a team, but because they haven't been in the playoffs in several years, and they just got back to the playoffs, and on top of that are making this deep run, like, if they won it all somehow, that would be then people are going to go like, it's because we had a really strange year and a bunch of guys got hurt. But the other three teams, you know, they look and feel like what we're used to seeing in championship teams in this league. So the only people I think who will look at it through, you know, a jaded lens will be those who were looking for reasons to denigrate that team for whatever other reason.
So then America should rise up as one and root for Atlanta to win.
Just for the chaos. I mean, I root for chaos, so sure, why not? But even then, look, Trae Young, you can already see it. Dude is really special, is going to have a long and incredible career. He's about the big games and big moments, and they do have some other great talent there, but they don't fit the typical profile on paper of a champion that we were used to seeing in this league.
You may have realized that as you were doing it, Howard, but when you said you root for chaos, you just endeared yourself to Ray Ratto more than ever before in your lifetime. On the Hawks issue, is this a team that is talented but young and on a hot streak? Or would you say that perhaps Nate McMillan's Hawks specifically are just one of the, seven or eight best teams in the league?
I think they are. I think Nate McMillan has done an incredible job. I thought it was insane when Indiana let him go in the first place. All that team did was exceed expectations and overachieve every single year that he was coaching them. I did not understand that decision whatsoever. And, you know, he takes over midseason after they fire Lloyd Pierce. And, you know, part of it was that they got healthy at the right time. Part of it was maybe needing a change of voice. And maybe just Nate McMillan being a far more experienced coach, maybe that's what they needed. And maybe, you know, it's really hard with these things to kind of determine exactly which factor was the most important in a team suddenly having a breakthrough. But let's remember this, too. For the last couple of years, we've looked at what the Hawks were doing and saying there's something going on there. Something good's going on there. They've been drafting well. You don't have to like the Luka-Trae Young swap, but you could tell that Trae Young is really talented. And you could see that Kevin Huerter had something and John Collins had something. And they made the trade for Capella, and you could just see the pieces falling into place. I'm not saying I expect it to come together this spectacularly this quickly. I don't think anybody did. But, you know, if you were to give them health to start the season, or if you want to say it's about the coaching, let's say Nate McMillan has started the season. Look at the rate that they won at. If they had done that the whole season without the injuries, without the coaching change, they would have been top four in the East. You know, the fact that they were top five, it shouldn't have mattered you know, that much perception-wise. But if they had been a home court advantage team in the first round, you look at them a little differently. If they hadn't, just made the playoffs for the first time in years this year, we would have looked at them differently. But on paper, on talent alone, did they already deserve probably to have the respect of being a top, would you say, seven or eight team in the league? I mean, yeah. They've shown it now, clearly. I don't think what the Hawks are doing right now is a fluke at all.
Here's the deal. You can't get to the Eastern Conference Finals if you're a bad team. I think we can all agree on that. That's for sure. The team that was supposed to be there, though, obviously is sitting around reviewing whether or not they should or shouldn't have trusted the process. I will still say that the process in some ways worked because they went from not mattering to a 50-win team that was a contender. But boy, obviously, all the ire coming down on Ben Simmons today is extreme. He is a skilled NBA player with a lot of merits. His one demerit, though, what do you think happens, Howard? Is he on the next train out of town in Philadelphia, or is there a reclamation project to try to build him once again?
Well, we know that a couple things. Daryl Morey, during his time in Houston, was incredibly aggressive and always looking to improve the Rockets and is not afraid of making big deals and likes making big deals. So there's one. Two, he already tried trading Ben Simmons once for James Harden. So, I think all those things add up to probably they're going to make a major move if they can, but you have to find a trading partner, and you have to find the right fit coming back. And so, you know, do I think that they will try to trade Simmons? Do I think it's time for them to seriously consider now breaking up the Simmons-Embiid pairing? Yeah, but, the devil is in the details. They got to find the right deal. And, you know, I don't know how much Ben Simmons' trade value might be hurt now. That's a big, theme over the last 24 hours. I mean, look, he's still a unicorn. He's still like a 6'10 guy who has, you know, point guard skills minus the shooting, but he's got great passing skills, great court vision, can defend 1 through 5. Like, he's still a really talented and impactful player, but he just might not be on the right team with the right co-star. And, you know, he certainly also needs to expand his game. Like, I think that's completely on Ben Simmons, and he has been really reticent to do that. And when it's been brought up before, he hems and haws and evades it, or he says, as he did, you know, a couple of years ago, I made the All-Star team, as if that's the all-purpose reason why you don't have to expand your offensive repertoire. So a lot of that's on him. You know, the scary thing is he's so talented. You could trade him, and he might go discover his jump shot and his confidence in shooting it somewhere else. And then that could look really bad in retrospect. And remember, like, it takes guys some time. Now you have to want to shoot it, right? Like Jason Kidd, I was reminding somebody of this earlier today. Jason Kidd, as you guys probably recall, was once referred to as Asin because he's got no J. And then late in his career, mid-career, he really hones the three-point jumper, changes his game, makes him that much more dangerous. But he was a great, like Ben Simmons, he was already a great passer and defender before that. But getting the three-point shot down made him that much better. But even before he was good at shooting it, he shot it on a semi-regular basis to keep defenses honest. And in this era, it's that much more important. For Ben Simmons not to have that in his game as a primary ball handler is really problematic in this era.
People have said throughout the last 24 hours that there is no comp for what has happened to Simmons. Is that in fact true, or are there other guys who have been this reluctant to do such a basic thing and never get out of it? Is there another Ben Simmons in the past that we're overlooking?
Nobody comes to mind. I mean, listen, there are plenty of guys who had holes in their game, right? Like Ben Wallace is going to the Hall of Fame this year and had no offensive game to speak of, minus a putback here and there, but he was a supreme defender and rebounder and shot blocker and all that. There are guys who have been one-dimensional and even as one-dimensional stars for that matter, guys who you know were just really great at one or two things, did not have a complete well-rounded game. I think it would be more the fact that you know the talent is there, and also like his position kind of requires it. As I said earlier, I don't think you can be a primary ball handler in this league, in this era, and not have any jump shot, not be willing to shoot, and not keep developing those parts of your game. I mean, Giannis is at least willing to shoot it. Now, he went too far in the other direction at times, taking too many threes. But, you know, same criticism is fair of Giannis. Like, he's got to develop more of his mid-range game. It's not even just the three. It's, do you have a pull-up game? Do you have a floater? Defenses are going to find ways to take away what you do best, and they're going to sag off you, and they're going to make it harder on your teammates. So do something about it. And that's, if you're a star in this league, and I'm not talking about role players who come in for 15 minutes and just try to lock somebody down or whatever. Nobody cares whether they expand their game. I mean, they should anyway. But the stars have to. That's your job. Keep improving. Keep evolving.
Looking at the game tomorrow, the perhaps two, and I don't know, we could argue about Booker and Paul, but perhaps the two brightest stars sidelined, do you expect we will see both Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard again, and when, to the best guess?
I mean, I am talking out of my rear on this, but my best guess is that we will see Chris Paul sooner than later, because all the murmurings seem to be that he did get vaccinated, and so it's just a matter of time before they can clear him. And, I don't, and there's been no indication that he's got symptoms or anything else. There's no reason to think he should be out for a long stretch here. They just have to abide by their own rules about when he can be cleared to come back. Kawhi Leonard, you know, sprained ACL, and it's been, what, a week or so, almost a week since we first heard that diagnosis, maybe a little less than a week. I think it's kind of concerning that we haven't heard any updates indicating that it's okay, because the sprain could mean it's a torn ACL. A sprain is a minor tear. And so it's just a matter of degree. And, you know, I think there's a chance we don't see Kawhi Leonard again this postseason.
I think you might be right about that. I mean, Paul George frames it by saying, you know, we're praying for him. You normally don't pray for a guy who's about to come back soon. So who knows? I don't know what to infer from that. We'll wrap things up with this, Howard Beck. I am never carrying not even a drop in a bucket of water for the Utah Jazz ever again. How do they let that series off the stick after Kawhi went down? And by the way, Terrence Mann, welcome to the NBA, man. You're awesome.
He was fun. Boy, what a story. 48th pick, I think. Just amazing. I mean, but also, listen, huge credit to Paul George. I mean, this is a guy who the whole universe had turned on. Like, everybody forgot, like, what he was when he was in Indiana, leading those Pacers teams to the conference finals back-to-back years, going toe-to-toe with LeBron James. He goes to Oklahoma, had one really great year. But then, the Clippers storyline for the last couple of years has just been that these guys, you know, gag in big situations. And Paul George made the mistake of speaking openly about mental health in the bubble. So people were really down on him. And I think thought this is not a guy who's capable of carrying a team. And it's interesting. I mean, maybe the opposite is true. Maybe the fact that he's just had a really difficult time meshing with Kawhi Leonard and them trying to figure out the division of labor, where once Kawhi's out, all of a sudden Paul George is like, well, I got to do this. It's on me. I'm the only star left on this team. And, man, he answered the call and then some. So he was great. Reggie Jackson, who's, bounced all over the league, came up huge for them. And then Terrence Mann as well, of course. So I'm not putting this on the – like, we always do this, right? It was at one team's, success or the other team's failure. Did one team choke or did the other team just have a great comeback? Like, I'm not looking at this as a Jazz choke. I look at this as the Jazz – overachieved by some stretch in the regular season. They were the best team in the league by record. But you know what? We've seen that with the Bucks too the last couple of years, where they were the best team by record and lost. It's not always indicative of what you can do in the postseason, because it's the postseason when having superstars matters most. And the Jazz have a really great player in Donovan Mitchell and a great defender in Rudy Gobert. But Rudy Gobert is not your typical second star, because he's not an offensive generator. And it's usually a LeBron and Anthony Davis, or a Steph and Kevin Durant and that kind of configuration. The Jazz don't have that. And I know that sounds reductive, but sometimes it's as simple as that. They just don't have the star power at that level. And you could say, well, the Clippers didn't either without Kawhi. Okay, but Paul George is a really dynamic scorer, and the Clippers found some things that worked, especially the small ball, and some guys just broke through. So disappointment for Utah, sure, but I'm not – I don't see this as some major failing by them. They are who they are.
Howard, let's say the Warriors get that 0.2% chance and 14 becomes 1-2-3. And they take the Minnesota pick at 4. Like, do fans just storm NBA offices to burn them down at that point, screaming conspiracy?
I mean, fans are willing to spin anything into a conspiracy theory anyway. Like, it doesn't matter what the outcome is. It's always a conspiracy for somebody. That's the beauty of conspiracy theories. There is nothing that can dissuade you if you believe in this nonsense, that, like, every outcome just proves the conspiracy somehow. So,
can you prove that, though? That could be a conspiracy. That answer sounds like a conspiracy to me. Howard, thank you very much. Great to talk to you, as always.
Thanks, fellas.
Howard Beck here on 95.7 The Game. People will go nuts. if the Warriors go from 14 to 1, 2, or 3, and that Minnesota pick comes in and they're picking, oh my gosh, that would be just like, Ray, you root for chaos? There you go. Root for that more than any permutation of NBA Finals or NBA champion, because nothing would get people's dander up quite like the Warriors getting two top five primo picks this year.
On the other hand, if they only get the 14, people around here will scream that it's a conspiracy. Everybody has a tinfoil hat that is shaped just for their little tiny heads. So no matter what happens, someone will be sure that the hot coin was in play. So
what happened?
I'm assuming that everything will piss everybody off if you squint hard enough.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I wish we could just enjoy this stuff. But, look, there's a really good chance the Warriors are going to have a chance to improve in this draft, whatever happens.
Boy,
and we'll know tomorrow. Like, what, 25 and a half hours or so from now? Where are we at?
Ping pong balls, I believe, start flying in the 5 o'clock hour. And so you figure they're going to go.
Six? Was that a six from Lucas? Did Lucas just flash a 6 p.m.? 6 p.m.
It's a 6 p.m. 6 p.m. East or 6 p.m. our time?
So I believe everything is set to start at 5:30. By the way, we can catch it live. We'll be taking you there here, 95.7 The Game. So I was giving you a 26-hour warning. So I believe 5:30 is when the proceedings start. We may not know where the Warriors are picking until a little after that. But we'll have every pick live for you.
Gotcha.
Hey, here's the thing. They're going to have that determined before they go on the air. It's not like they're going to actually have lottery balls popping up. Just go ahead and read the list. But no, they got to drag it out and make a TV show.
There will be a commercial break in the middle of it for sure.
Guarantee it. Guaranteed. Yeah. No doubt about it. You know,
yes, you will see singing hood ornaments several times between the start of the show and the first envelope.
By the way, when I criticized that, I said it was Depeche Mode that was kind of responsible for that song. It's not. It's the Pet Shop Boys, and we got to get that right. Got to get that right. List of things we're sick of?
You never can confuse one-hit wonders.
Oh, well, neither are one-hit wonders, Ray. Depeche Mode, ample hits. Pet Shop Boys.
Tell me the last song that you hummed in your head from them.
Oh, Personal Jesus. I was just thinking at the other. Dum, dum, da, dum, 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 da, dum. It's Pride Month. There's Depeche Mode everywhere in this town right now.
Okay.
You got to take my word for it. So, look. I got Depeche Mode there for a second. I totally forgot where
Happy
I was going.
Happy Pride, and shout out again to Carl Nassib.
That's a perfect way to kind of put a bow on that. Thank you very much, Matt, for getting me out of that. There was a really good piece of news that I heard for Howard Beck, for Ben Simmons, in our interview, when he basically said, look at where Paul George's status among the hoi polloi was just a year ago. Like, Ben Simmons, I know you're having a long day. Ben Simmons, today is absolutely the day to stay off of social media. You are just, I mean, crucifixion is putting it nicely. All forks out for Ben Simmons. Stay off social media. It can't help a young man who's dealing with confidence issues. But the advice I would give him is, look, you got talent, period. No, there is no denying your NBA talent. And Paul George went from a guy who there was no denying his NBA talent to everyone only wanted to frame him for what he is not, and look what he is now, not only a year later. Chad Ford had a really interesting sequence of tweets about Ben Simmons. He said, you know, people who are, you know, just going all the way back to revisionist history that Philadelphia should have never taken Ben Simmons number one overall is nonsense. He ranks first in his class for win shares. He ranks first in his rookie class for value over replacement player. He leads the entire class in assists per game by a full 3 assists. He ranks number 2 in rebounds in his rookie class. He ranks number 4 in points in his rookie class. And he's a 3-time All-Star, a 2-time first-team All-Defender, a 1-time third-team All-NBA player. So to frame him as simply a scrub is an overreaction based on the last couple of games you saw. And they were big games. And by the way, this is why the playoffs matter. Reputations are made and destroyed with playoff performances. But there's a better Ben Simmons than what we saw. And some team, if there is to be a trade for him, is going to get pennies on the dollar worth of value if Philadelphia has to sell low on him.
On the other hand, that's kind of a false dichotomy that Chad Ford is giving us, because nobody's comparing him to Dragan Bender, and nobody's comparing him to Marquise Chris. You know, they're comparing him to every player in the National Basketball Association's history who refused to shoot, even though there were times when he absolutely had to shoot. And that's the problem. It's not about other players. It's about him freezing up against the basics of the game. That's why this is a thing. You know, because lots of guys go in the playoffs, they have tough playoffs, and, you know, they move on. And that was Paul George, too. But he was never a guy who passed up the right basketball play out of some pathology that he might look bad.
No, you're right about
that. And that's why Simmons is a thing. Because I don't know of any other player who just said, I'm not going to shoot even when it's the right play.
The text line.
Almost everybody else has shot too much. He not only doesn't shoot enough, he doesn't shoot at all. That's the problem.
Somebody on the text line says, Warriors going to swoop him up? No, they will not be swooping him up. Joe Lacob basically said that today, and we will come back with that sound. We've also got Anthony Slater joining us in less than a half an hour to talk about ping pong balls bouncing tomorrow for the Warriors and every other team in the lottery, so stick around. Much more still coming up. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome this Monday afternoon. It's great to have you. A huge day in the Supreme Court when it comes to deciding what the NCAA might look like in a few years. We will get to that after Anthony Slater joins us coming up around 4:15 this afternoon to talk about the playoffs as we see them, player value as it's now perceived, and of course, the lottery ping pong bouncing balls for the Golden State Warriors coming up tomorrow with the NBA Draft Lottery. Welcome on back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. It is really good to have you here today. And as we were talking about earlier, there are a lot of people who love talking NBA, but like so many people, just do not understand how contracts tie abilities to trade players or renegotiate deals or anything like that. The NBA salary cap is a very long, nuanced, complicated conversation that feels like it changes every couple of weeks. Somebody on the text line, Ray and Matt, said, you know, I bet you that the Warriors, as Howard Beck was talking about, Ben Simmons in the right situation probably looks a lot better. Somebody says, I bet you that the Warriors would make that move if the price was low. There is no low price on Ben Simmons. There is no negotiating what he is locked into, which is $33 million next year, $35 million the year after that, $37.8 the year after that, and $40.3 the year after that. The only time Ben Simmons could be coming in for a low price would be in his unrestricted free agent year of 2025. Otherwise, his contract is locked in. And each year of his contract means that the cap hit will be equal to his base salary. So to move him in a trade, you are looking to match dollars back. And I don't think there is a team right now thinking we're willing to trade our max player for what Ben Simmons is as a max player after such a rough playoff series.
Well, see,
what about the Wizards?
Go ahead.
What about the Wizards?
Think about the Wizards?
The Wizards?
Russell Westbrook for Ben Simmons right now.
I mean, we're trading problems, but at least one dude is not scared to shoot.
Well, but aren't both teams better? Like, what good really is Russell Westbrook doing? He's just taking the ball out of Bradley Beal's hands. Ben Simmons could play center for them.
How about this?
Which is the one thing he can't do for the Sixers.
It's hard to match up where he fits or money. You might have just out of a hat pulled out the best trading partner available.
Hat is the nicest way you could describe where I pulled that from. But yes, it just popped into my head. I think it's kind of interesting, actually.
It's interesting, but I think it's way too much of a risk for the Wizards because they don't know a lot of what they don't know about what is in Simmons' head. And sure. I think that becomes – with Westbrook, you know what you're getting. With Simmons, you don't know if he's willing to play center. You don't know if that's going to suddenly make him, you know, take the obvious shot. You don't know, frankly, where his head is at on anything. And I think, sure, if the best kind of Ben Simmons would be of extraordinary help, but the best kind of Ben Simmons wouldn't get traded. So I don't think that's a match either, because there's way more risk in it for Philadelphia than there is for Washington. I'm sorry, the other way around. There's way more risk for Washington than there is Philadelphia.
But there's also way more reward, right? Because if Ben Simmons can turn it around, you've got a young guy who can be a part of your franchise moving forward, potentially with Bradley Beal, potentially after Bradley Beal, because who knows how that's going to work out. I think you can say pretty confidently a team built around Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal is not a serious contender. So, you know, to me, the yes, there's risk and more risk on their end, but the reward might be worth it. What would Russell Westbrook do on a team with Joel Embiid? I'm not sure, but I would like to watch it.
You know, somebody says, so you're basically saying if you could package Wiggins for Simmons, maybe you could get something done. I don't know if the Warriors would want to do that. Also think that putting Draymond Green and
that's it,
and Ben Simmons on the court at the same time together is a team where you only have to defend three players.
Well, you just answered the question. There's only what's the cheap? If you are asking me, what is the cheapest and most reasonable and conceivable way to acquire Ben Simmons? It is a trade built around Draymond Green. I don't think there's any debate to be had about that.
But if you're Philadelphia,
I wouldn't do that.
If you're Philadelphia and you're like, well, we got to get rid of a non-shooter. Now, Draymond Green, from an offensive
kind of
standpoint,
non-shooter.
Right. From an offensive standpoint, he's a Harlem Globetrotter compared to what we just saw from Ben Simmons. You know, he is.
Just in a different kind. And look, what is he really? What is Draymond Green more than anything? He's a 16-game player. And that's what Ben Simmons just showed more than anything. He is not.
Right.
Like, nobody was that upset about his free throw shooting in the regular season because, like, teams weren't as intent upon, the playoffs are just different. We know this. We talk about it. And in those different playoffs, Joel Embiid is that dude. And Ben Simmons is not. Now, is Draymond Green as young, as athletic, as potentially good as Ben Simmons? No, not even close.
By the way, Draymond doesn't even half his points scored. Simmons was at 14.3 points this
exactly.
year. Exactly. And Draymond
was at 7. But he's a 16-game player. And that's what they just found out, that right now, Ben Simmons is not. So, again, I don't think you could do that straight up. I don't think Philly would consider that straight up. But if it's him and Jordan Poole, if it's him and James Wiseman, you know, that's one price is different than the other there. If it's him and one of the picks, that, to me, is the cheapest you could expect to get Ben Simmons. Now, would you want to do that? I would not. I would take my chances with Draymond and the draft picks. Because I here's what I think, and maybe Joe Lacob doesn't want to say this, because although he kind of did. Maybe people just don't want to hear this, but it's the reality. And frankly, I think if they're honest deep in their souls, it's what they want the franchise to do. They just can't bear it. And that is the only responsible thing to do here to preserve the long-term health of your NBA franchise is to keep these picks. You have the rarest of chances to potentially have top 5 picks in back-to-back drafts, top 6 picks in back-to-back drafts, plus the 14, which is much better than any likely reasonable contender next year should ever expect to have. You can secure a long-term contender status. And rather than look at this playoffs and say, oh, man, if the Warriors had just added Dwayne Dedman or Austin Rivers, or, oh, if they had just traded for P.J. Tucker's on a team that's still playing.
Should have chased those wins.
Right.
for anyone saying that, like, I think the lesson, it should not be that, but the lesson should be being a team that can consistently get into the playoffs, even if it's in the 4 or 5 realm, year after year after year into the future. That's the best thing. Because then you always have a chance. And who knows, maybe the 14th pick turns out to be as good as Giannis Antetokounmpo. Where was he drafted, right? You never know about that stuff. But to have these assets at this time, where not only are you building for a future after Steph, but you still have a really MVP-level Steph, Klay hopefully coming back at some health. Like, here's how you add to your team. Klay coming back at some health. Another year of development for Poole, another year of development for Pascal and Wiseman, and 2 new high-level young players. That's how you do it. I mean, it sounds like you're not trying hard enough, but that's actually kind of the goal, is to secure the present and the future.
Well, it's such a form – that formula is almost never run, so people don't even know what that's supposed to look like.
I think that's part of it.
Yeah, more to the point. I mean, tying this back to Simmons, is there any team that has championship aspirations who believes right now that he makes them better in his current state?
Probably not.
And I don't think there is. I think, you know, you're basically going, well, gee, everybody says he was talented, and in some things he's very talented, but the most elemental thing he doesn't want to do for whatever reason, I think that makes you worse. Because okay, you so can't play him at the end of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you mostly, but let me throw something that a lot of people have tossed around just because, you know, they both seem like playoff teams that need to make a change. What about C.J. McCollum for Ben Simmons, straight up?
All I know is that a week ago the conversation was, could you trade him for Dame Lillard? So that's how wrong of a direction Ben Simmons' value has gone. And by the way, real quick, let me welcome everybody to your 4 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.